sir. El Doctor. Hello. Don't sew up anything that's supposed to remain open, okay?
Trust me on this one. It's a good idea.
Why do you think the symptoms haven't appeared on Mr. Spock?
If it were shackleitis, there'd be other symptoms. You couldn't move your legs as though they were chained.
I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV.
Go to see my doctor. She's one of the finest gastroenterologists in this city.
She? No way. The doctor's going to have me bend over. I want to look through my legs and see wingtips.
For God's sake, you're a doctor, not a fool, man.
We women have been poked and prodded by male doctors for centuries. I say it's high time you gents went to see a doctor of the opposite sex. See how you like waiting in that room, sitting there all naked and helpless and goosebumpy.
Niles, surely you could recommend someone.
Niles? I'm sorry, my mind was somewhere else.
Dr. Barry Dworkin is here taking any and all health-related questions at 521-TALK. That's 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility. Or 1-800-580-CFRA. I have to get your immediate take on this story out of Germany today.
Yes.
On circumcision. They've essentially banned it.
Yeah.
Circumcising young boys. And they say if a doctor performs a circumcision, even if it's at the parent's request because of whatever religious purposes or what have you, the doctor can be charged with assault. Is circumcision bad? Health-wise, is it bad? Are there benefits? What do we know?
Well, when you look at the evidence for circumcision, there's not a lot of data per se to say that if you circumcise an infant, you're going to provide them with that much more health benefit. There is some evidence to suggest that later on in life, those that have been circumcised have less chance of infection, some penile cancers, which are rare to begin with. There are a minority of young boys that the foreskin ends up getting too tight and they develop what's known as a phimosis, which is an inability for the foreskin to retract, which can be extremely painful and also interfere with urination.
So in that instance, it would be medically necessary.
In terms of a medical necessity, not much there, although big studies out of Africa with regards to HIV transmission have shown that circumcised men, there is less chance of transmitting in heterosexual couples, transmitting HIV, less of an infection rate. So there's that aspect as well. So it does boil down to cultural practices.
Yeah.
Whether this constitutes damage to the infant or an assault upon them, that's a more contentious issue because we have a lot of things that we do in our society that can result in worse harm. And the example I gave you, Rob, is in Germany, they may say it's harmful to the infant. You're not allowed to do that. But abortion laws, the way they are, you can abort a baby, which is even a more grievous injury. And yet that's allowed. So regardless of where you stand on the abortion issue, I'm using that simply as an example of their reasoning saying, well, you're not allowed to cause harm to the baby because it has to be able to provide consent to do that. And yet we end up doing other things to unborn children without their consent.
Obviously, they've been having this debate in Germany, but they've also had this debate in some U.S. states where there have been even referendum questions put to the public and plebiscites and whatnot.
Right.
Should circumcision be banned?
Yeah. And
are we having that debate in Canada? Is it an issue?
I don't think it's a huge issue.
No.
I think this is a practice. And again, it's certainly not in terms of an argument, it's not a valid argument to say, well, we've been doing this for hundreds, if not thousands of years, so therefore it's okay. What we can say, though, is that it has been done in modern times under circumstances where there's very little infection risk, very few complications in terms of trauma or harm to the individual as they are an adult, very little. No one really goes around complaining about it.
When a child is circumcised.
If a physician is doing it, the skin is frozen. You freeze the dorsal nerve, called the dorsal nerve of the penis. It's not painful to freeze it. It's a tiny needle that's used and freezes almost instantly. So the baby doesn't feel any pain.
At how old would you say?
Usually around 3 weeks of age, three, four weeks of age. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's certainly raw and red afterwards, but heals up after about 7 to 10 days. the baby doesn't seem any worse for wear. The babies that come in to see me that have been circumcised afterwards are perfectly fine. They're growing. There's been no drop off their growth curves. There really isn't anything to indicate that any long-term harm comes to the child because they've had this done. Other good examples, Rob, you know, if you think about it, kids that are in the ICU have all kinds of invasive procedures done to them because of illnesses from either birth or congenital defects, go through a lot more. A lot of these kids survive and they do very well. They're normal, healthy, happy children. So the idea that the argument being put forth that somehow you are causing trauma to them later on in life.
Well, that they haven't consented to this, that it's an ethical question about not having been able to give their consent to be done to them.
Right, but parents make decisions to vaccinate their kids, so needles are being jabbed into their arms. They consent to other surgical procedures. I mean, that's the job of the parent to decide on what is in their child's best interest. They are children. There are certainly philosophical discussions that can happen with this and rights issues that can be discussed with this. But if you're looking for, is this causing harm and is this reflective of everything we do to children? No. Is it going to cause any long-term harm? No evidence to show that that's the case. So really, what are we arguing about? You know, yes, you can argue it from a rights perspective, but, you know, it's... There's nothing that, in terms of what I see in my practice, you know, people ask me that question about do I circumcise, do I not, and I give them exactly what I mentioned to you. There's not a lot of medical evidence. In fact, what tends to be the reason is if the father is circumcised, the son usually gets circumcised, which is a lot of the, you know, and for religious reasons. There are various cultural practices as well. But other than that, I don't encourage or discourage. I just simply say, if you're thinking of it as a health issue, not really a reason to do it. If you're thinking of it as something that the father has had done and it's a cultural thing, well, then that's your decision to make.
Right.
But I don't see it as being grievously harmful to the child.
How long does it take to circumcise a child?
It'll take about...
Half an hour?
Not even. It takes literally after freezing, which takes about a couple of minutes, it takes about 30 seconds to 1 minute.
Wow. And then healed up between 7 and 10 days.
Heals up, yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, I can understand both sides of the argument. I tend to be sort of, I don't get excited one way or the other. It's an individual decision.
Well, of all the great medical questions for us to be discussing, this is not anywhere near the most pressing.
No, and again, if it comes down to are you harming the child in the medium and long term? No. In the short term, sure, you're doing a surgery, performing surgery on them, on essentially a normal part of anatomy. But at the same time, you're not causing any long-term harm to the child. And if the parents are aware of the consequences in terms of, as with any surgery, risk of infection, understanding, you know, well, I know that the person is doing it, has a lot of experience, how many procedures they've done, their outcomes of their procedures, as with any surgery that you do. You know, that's the information you have to give someone. But right now we have religious freedoms. We also have individual freedoms. And I think that's where the discussion is with regards to balancing those out.
Let's take a call from Jacques in Gatineau. Hello, Jacques.
Hello.
Hi.
Doctor.
Yes.
Yes. Thyroid problems.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. What tests should I be doing for my thyroid if I think I have a thyroid problem?
Well, if you believe that there is a issue with regards to a thyroid that's not functioning properly, the most common test that is done is called a thyroid stimulating hormone test, or a TSH.
TSH, yeah. Right.
Thyroid stimulating hormone is produced in the pituitary gland, which is a gland that hangs off the base of the brain.
Right.
And it will be secreted by the pituitary to go to the thyroid gland to stimulate the gland to tell it to produce thyroid hormone.
Right.
When your body makes enough thyroid hormone, it circulates back and tells the pituitary gland that there's enough thyroid hormone, and so the brain stops stimulating, releasing that hormone, and around it goes.
So what other tests from the TSH should I be asking my doctor to do rather than the T4 and TSH?
The other things that you would do is if the thyroid hormone level, the TSH was elevated, meaning that your thyroid gland is not making enough thyroid hormone. If that's the case, sometimes it's important to try to find out if what the source was, what the cause is. In some instances, you can have a situation where the body makes its own antibodies to attack the thyroid gland.
Right.
And so you can have different diseases, such as something called Hashimoto's thyroiditis. You can have another one that's called Graves' disease.
Right.
And so there are antibody tests, and these are called anti-thyroid antibodies.
But I mean, what type of tests would my doctor be more or less wanting to do the tests if I were to ask for all these tests? Which ones can I ask for that he would find would make sense?
Well, it's the initial test that is done as a TSH, because you don't do all the other ones until you actually establish whether there's a problem with the thyroid.
Okay, so you only initially try the TSH.
It's the TSH.
And after that, you ask, they do other tests if needed.
Correct, because it's a way of screening for thyroid disease.
Okay.
It's not perfect, not a perfect test, but for most people, a sensitive TSH will work very well and certainly reflect on thyroid function.
Okay, so other tests would be secondary.
Correct.
Okay, and where could I go if I needed private or if I were to pay for the test? Is there anywhere in the area that I could do that?
Well, the test is covered, so it's not as if you have to pay for that. Your family doctor can order that test. They give you the requisition. You just go to the lab, and it's covered for you.
Right. But, I mean, are there private clinics in the area, in other words?
There are no private blood lab clinics. I mean, there are companies that run the lab clinics, but, again, they accept the health cards. There are certain blood tests that the government does not cover that people have to pay for example, for celiac disease. But for thyroid testing, there really isn't anything in the Ottawa area where you have to go and pay for a thyroid test.
I can't go just go there and say, hey, do the test.
They need a requisition to do that.
Nowhere in the area.
No, you just can't go in and say, I'd like to get a thyroid test.
Right. Okay, great.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome,
Jacques.
Plenty of phone lines available, folks, at 521-TALK, star 580, 1-800-580-CFRA. Imagine this, Dr. Dworkin. You're going to see the changing of the guard on Parliament Hill. It just started this week, and I think it runs until August, I read here. And boy, oh boy, prayers for this fellow. 20 years old. He's part of the Governor General's Foot Guards. And he trips during the ceremony on a piece of the manhole cover. And as you know, they carry the big bayonets.
Yeah.
And he impales himself. and he suffered a severe stab wound. Mercifully, everybody rushed to his assistance, but they said he was losing all kinds of blood. The paramedics came and got things under control, and he is in serious but stable condition in the hospital.
So he'll make it. But
Pretty
in the abdomen itself, did it say where he was stabbed?
Suffered a severe stab wound from his rifle-mounted bayonet after falling during the parade. Medics from the Canadian Forces immediately provided first aid to the injured man, applying pressure to his wound until paramedics arrived. In addition to his wound, paramedics treated the man for severe blood loss. He was taken to a nearby hospital where he is currently in serious but stable condition.
Yeah.
Obviously, you jump into action and you put pressure on the wound right away.
You put pressure. Yeah. It depends on how deep the wound is. You can put pressure, but if he's cut an artery further into the, if we assume it's in the abdomen when he fell, you get blood that collects in the abdomen and you can't really stop that bleeding. What saved him, frankly, is the fact that he's 20 years old.
Really?
He's young, so he has a lot of reserve. So he's able to survive something like that. Had he been much older, might not have been as lucky.
Frightening.
Yeah.
Very frightening. Apparently, they're going to have to take a look at how exactly they're doing this. That he was, in fact, the second guard to trip on that manhole cover during the same ceremony.
Hmm.
And you look at the outcome
that's completely preventable injury.
Goodness. Okay, back after the news with Dr. Barry Dworkin here on 580 CFRA.
So my wife said I should get my hearing checked. So we went to a place to do that. They put me in a booth with headphones on. There's a glass partition. My wife and the hearing technician are on the other side of the glass. The guy through the headphones says, "You're going to hear words electronically through the headphones. When you hear a word, let us know what word that is, and that's how we can check your hearing. Ready to go?" "Yeah." "All right, here we go. Here's the first word."
I didn't hear anything.
We didn't start yet. All right, here we go. Here's the first word. Ready? Chermaschukun.
What do you want from me?
What word was that?
Was it Chazamahazad? No, I'm gonna say Chazamahazad. No, put me down for Chazamahazad, Chazamahazad.
No, 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 what word did that sound like?
It didn't sound like a word.
No, 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 come on, I'm gonna play it again. You gotta tell me what word it most closely sounds like, right? Here we go. Chazamahazad.
Chicken musket. I swear, he and my wife go, like, I can see you. I can't hear, but I can see. 2020, the mocking that's going on. It's not nice.
Are you ready for the next word?
If it's a word!
All right, here we go. Ready? Chazamahazad.
Tuna fish sandwich. Do you believe me now? I can't hear. I said that when I came in the building. Is there a box that says can't hear? Check that box and get me the hell out of here.
I don't know if Dr. Dworkin's going to make it until 4 o'clock here. 580 CFRA Wednesday. You like that one?
It's so funny.
Oh, okay. Let's go to Tracy. Go ahead, Tracy.
Right. Hi, Hi, Dr. Barry. I had bunion surgery on both my feet in May.
Right.
And 2 weeks after I got my cast off, I developed an infection in my incision, which I'm on antibiotics for now. But I also stubbed my other toe really bad.
Okay.
And it almost looked like the swelling's gone down a little bit now, but it looked like my bunion had returned. And I'm kind of freaking out a little bit that I've gone through these surgeries. And now I do have an appointment with my surgeon, but at the meantime, I'm sort of beating myself up. And is it possible to wreck my surgery?
Probably not. I mean, stubbing the toe shouldn't make the bunion come back.
Okay.
You have to allow all the swelling to disappear and everything to heal, but it's unlikely that you shifted any bone when you did that.
Okay, good.
So don't feel too guilty. People stub their toes all the time.
Yes. Okay, well, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Up next is June in Ottawa. June.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Dr. Barry and Rob. I have a problem. I had a parasite, and it took 6 years to have it diagnosed. So I got to the point where I've lost most of my hair and other problems. Now, when they did determine what I had, they put me on antibiotics and I got much, much better.
Mm-hmm. What parasite was it?
I don't know. They didn't tell me at the hospital. It was at the hospital in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't tell me what type it was.
Was this from any traveling that you did? Did you go out of the country at all?
And I'm a very clean person. I wash my hands all the time. I don't eat shell food. Mm-hmm.
Was it an intestinal parasite? Or
yes.
It was, eh?
Yes. I lost almost 50 pounds.
Well, it had to have been something either that you ingested, either from food that was contaminated. That's usually the most common source other than traveling elsewhere, you know, traveling in various tropical countries and such where there are other types of intestinal parasites.
No, I haven't been traveling at all.
But why did it take them so long?
I have no idea. I went to four hospitals. And because I lived in Quebec at the time, they really, the general and the civic, they just gave me hit and a miss, you know. They didn't get down to the bottom of it, and then the Shawville Hospital finally found.
So they did. They did. I guess stool cultures, and they did that kind of stuff to find it. Yeah.
I, I was almost dying. I thought it was.
I just find that really the amount of time it took them to diagnose that certainly was excessively long, because usually if someone is losing weight, usually parasitic infections will cause changes in a person's bowel function. So they'll either have diarrhea or mucus or blood.
Oh, I had diarrhea very badly and throwing up.
And usually it's to diagnose parasites is a very straightforward thing. A stool sample usually will show the parasite. So I'm just wondering why it took them so long to diagnose that.
Me too. But I've been feeling much better. My appetite has come back.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
It's just my hair keeps falling out, and I'm wondering if it could come back.
Well, if the loss of hair was secondary to all the weight loss you were having and being malnourished because of the parasite, then we could make an assumption that the hair will come back as you start to recover. So that's something to keep in mind.
How long does it take? This was over 3 months ago that I got diagnosed, and they gave me antibiotics.
Well, the weight loss that you had, you still had lost that 50 pounds, right? So you're at that weight that you were at.
Yeah, I've gained a little, but not much.
Right, and I think that
I'm eating anything I want.
That's good. I think part of it is that if you lost 50 pounds and ended up being malnourished, it is gonna take time for your body to repair itself. So although 3 months may seem to be a long time, you've had years and years of being malnourished, and so now you're able to absorb the nutrients in the food that you're consuming that will likely contribute to more hair growth. If that doesn't happen, say another 3 months goes by and the hair is not growing very well, then you may want to see a dermatologist or even an endocrinologist, so a hormone specialist, to see if there's anything else that's contributing to this lack of hair growth.
Let's go to Ray in Ottawa. Ray.
Hello.
Hi.
Dr. Dworkin and Rob. I never thought I'd ever go on the air and tell the world about this.
Okay.
I got circumcised at age 26. At the Sunnybrook Hospital in Toronto. I was born in Newfoundland, and I think they were probably a little hit and miss about whether they did it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I had it done with a local anesthetic because, you know, I wanted to be there and the fooling around with my boy toy, right? And I haven't had a minute of regret about it, I can tell you. I did there before. I had what was called a redundant foreskin, so I was at the doctor's recommendation. I had it removed. And there is a personal hygiene issue in that situation. And I did have an infection when I was about 5 years old, which you can imagine was pretty uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And but I can tell you I've had no regrets about it, although the head is a little sensitive because the skin is no longer there. But in terms of having sex, I had sex both before and after. And before, the penis tends to slide out of the vagina more easily, whereas when the head expands.
Okay, Ray. Thanks for sharing, Ray. We're glad it went well. I can understand. That's just what we were talking about.
Yeah.
It was medically necessary for
Ray. For Ray.
Okay.
I think we should leave it at that.
Let's just leave it at that. Cindy in Greeley.
Oh, I really didn't want to follow that one, but
how are you doing, Cindy?
Good. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
A quick question, or I hope quick. I've had low iron for a little over 2 years now, and I've been taking iron pills every single day since it was 2 years last month.
Okay.
And my iron levels are still only at 32.
Okay. And symptoms with this, feeling tired or?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Exhausted, heavy legs. Of course, being female, I mean, it's hard to catch up every month and everything, but it just doesn't seem to want to be getting past that 32 level.
Okay. So the issue is really that the iron supplementation is not providing you with an adequate amount of time to replace the blood that you're losing with your periods.
That's what I believe.
So if that's the case, then there are different options. One is to try and reduce the blood loss each month, because that amounts to a lot over the course of a year. And there are different ways to do that, especially if it's now clinically significant where this blood loss is resulting in low iron levels, which makes you quite tired. And so there are different approaches. One of the approaches that is done is using either medication or more of a physical intervention. So from terms of medications, there's a medication that's used called cyclocapron that's used only at the time of your period that reduces the amount of blood loss that you have. So in effect, again, losing less blood means you're saving a lot of iron. And it's only used when you start to have some bleeding during your period, usually taken for a day or two, and then you stop using it. So that's one option. The other option is using an IUD. There's an IUD called the Mirena IUD, which also over the course of a year, for one out of every five women, you have no bleeding at all with your periods, and it's good for 5 years. So it does reduce blood loss that way. So those are a couple of ways to approach it. There are many others, but we're running out of time. So there are many others. But the point is you shouldn't have to suffer with iron loss and feeling tired, because there are many safe options available to allow you to regain those iron stores and also have less blood loss.
Okay.
All right, Cindy, we've got to go, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your call. Appreciate
Bye-bye.
That. Bye. You're back on Sunday if people want to. You're not
Sunday's
here on Sunday?
July 1st.
Oh, Sunday's July 1st, yes.
I'll be back July 8th. And actually on July 8th, Yoni Friedhoff will be on along with Dan Gardner because of the article he wrote about Michael Bloomberg.
Oh, yes,
and
okay.
The soda cup thing. So we're
I hope you'll, because Yoni on his blog, Weighty Matters,
oh, yes.
talks about the bacon sundae. I mean, this is what the world has come to. Burger King sells a sundae with bacon.
Well, there's nothing like looking at a plate of bacon and say, you know, a side of ice cream and some whipped cream will really do the job.
The cherry on top.
The cherry on top.
Thanks for coming in.
You're welcome.
Dr. Barry Dworkin. Don't forget health headlines as well. 10 minutes to 7 during Madeley in the morning.